The Las Virgenes Unified School District states that their district-wide challenges of the year will come from reduced funding from the state. Try not to laugh, since we all have that challenge. But the excitement comes from building upon an outstanding educational program, which posted the highest academic scores in the region last year. Ladies and gentlemen, it's an honor to present Dr. Don Zimmering.
Notice I said the highest last year, you see, because Tony beat me out this year. And you know, you never, ever trumpet your test scores, folks, because it's, you know, if you live by them, you die by them. And I'm a firm believer. Thank you so much for honoring me here. I still have to tell you, when I get called to do this and they say it's a superintendent's forum, part of me still doesn't connect to that. This is my second year as superintendent of the school district. I tease everyone saying this was definitely the last man standing school of management, because I'm beginning my 33rd year of teaching, and I still believe myself as a teacher in the school district, and it's been my life's work. And people say, well, are you excited? And all the adjectives, and the best adjective I can tell you is that when you take a look at the caliber of the people I get to work with, it's a race every day, because every one of them, from the board members to the principals to everybody I work with, is passionate, dedicated, and brighter than am I. So it's always a challenge, especially when they're all in the room like they are right now. So saying that, we were tasked with a topic of saying the changing face of education, and you can hear me back there, my table, good? We're all right? Right, good. Okay, the changing face of education. Good, good. Hold the block. Changing face of education. So what type of things do we have to look at? Well, I know this sounds so trite, but think about it. We're once again at a crossroads. And a week ago, this state could hold the distinction of saying nobody was more screwed up fiscally anywhere in the world. But, well, the president's taken that away from us now, so we don't even have that. We're faced with increasing and very, very often now conflicting demands. So if things aren't bad enough, let's just arbitrarily say every eighth grader is going to pass algebra in 3 years. Sure. Yeah, really. Okay. And in California, we're faced with reduced resources and what I term to be very unrealistic expectations. And those aren't expectations just from the state. They're oftentimes from our own community, from our school boards, from ourselves. And that's a challenge, because there's not a person in this room, and very frankly not a person I know, that is in public education that doesn't believe in their mission and belief of what we do for kids. A word that I really, my staff and my principals will tell you they're getting tired of hearing, is that as public sector agencies now, we have to learn to become much more nimble. Police departments don't have to be nimble. They're the only game in town. You can't go get a permit to go get a different police department, right? You know, can't have a charter police department. They're it. We're not. And this is a big change for us. Huge change of landscape where we're in competition for people. And we have to be nimble to be able to change, and we have to start marketing ourselves. And that's not just against each other. We shouldn't be marketing against each other. We should be marketing ourselves based upon continual improvement, where we're strong and really, really celebrating those strengths, and market ourselves to parents who may decide to homeschool or private school. I do have a prediction. I think the one interesting fallout we're seeing from the economy, and I haven't talked to my colleagues yet, we are seeing a return from private school of a lot of kids. And that, I wish I could tell you, is because we're so wonderful. It's not. It's part of the economy. But it's interesting. People are saying, wow, this is a lot better than I thought. Talk about a backhanded compliment. And we have to start looking at more and more options and alternatives. We have to find better ways, different ways, a variety of ways, all those words that we never had to before when we were basically a monopoly. And one thing that, again, my staff's getting tired of, but I can't stress enough, and I've got 3 sons who are a product of our district, and they're poster children. They had a great, great experience in public schools. But the generation of kids we have in our schools now, technology is no longer an add-on. It's going to have to become, in all of our collective mindsets, just another utility. And we cannot think of technology any longer as something, well, if we have money, we will, just as you can't think that way about paying your electric bill or the water bill. This is something that will become elemental, foundational to everything we do and how we teach. Because if we don't, we will then have totally ill-served our kids. The kids, the world they're going into is going to be just rooted in technology. And for us to ignore that or say it's something we can't afford right now is to really basically proceed at our own risk. So let's talk about the different world that our kids are going to face. My apologies, I don't think I've shared this here. Many of you may have seen this. I've stolen some slides from two different presentations, but the really key fact data sets that you need to see. So taking a look at this, let me go back. Here we go. Take a look at those pieces of data. It says a lot about what we have to be prepared to have our kids do. I mean, when you take a look at vast majority of degrees are in science and engineering, not in our country. We're barely at 5%. We have to look at ways now to better teach math. One of the reasons we get these bizarre ideas of, well, let's just have everyone learn algebra. Poof. No, but the point is science and engineering is not in this country any longer. We are no longer at that forefront. Far more engineers are being graduated in China. They want to be the leader in biotechnology. Amgen is well aware of that. And you take a look that by 2010, there'll be more Chinese speaking English than there are Americans speaking English in America. These are not things that we can just pretend aren't there. This is what our kids will be leaving our systems facing. In terms of other data sets, India's doing all of the MRCAT cans, tax returns in India. UK's A-level essay, their college entrance essay basically, is graded in India. And our kids are going to have 10 to 15 careers. My youngest son freely talks about that. You know, the concept of Dad, you talk about a dinosaur. He asked me, what came before the dinosaurs, Dad? Why? Well, I think you may be there. Thanks. A lot. I got to share this. I've got the principal of Round Meadow Elementary here is Tom Spence's brand new principal, and he's going to be a great, great principal. And I visited his school on opening day, and this is the only things that can come when you tell the truth. And I went into a classroom, and one of the things that's hard for me, and I don't know if my other superintendents here will tell you the same thing, is that teachers always react differently when I walk in a room. Most of them have stopped doing, you know, really vile gestures at me, which I think is a very good positive sign. But some of them feel they have to stop the class and introduce me. I really don't like that. I'm uncomfortable. I really want to see the kids in action and teach. But this one teacher thought that was very important and got very excited. So, oh my gosh, oh, boys and girls. Oh, here we go. But do you know who's here? And they all, of course, turn around and look at me. And actually, I was actually wearing the same suit I'm wearing today. So I'll let you be the judge. Shirt, tie, and everything. Yeah, really. So I'll let you be the judge. And this one boy looks at me. And she says, do you, boys and girls, do you know who this is? This one boy looks at me and says, John McCain. Well, this is a second grade class, and I was really pleased. We're teaching civics. This kid got it. And I looked at him, and I said, I'm very flattered. Why would you think that I'm John McCain? I heard he's really old. Honest to God, true story. I don't know where Tom is going in his next career of the 10 to 15. No, okay. All right. So here was one of my challenges. Let's talk about our district. We got 15 phenomenal sites, but one of the challenges I've got is they were all kind of acting like these independent operations. They all still are. We foster that. That's great. They capitalize on strengths. But one of the things that's frustrated our school board and frustrated me is our school board really wants to have a school district mission and a vision, which seems separate and apart from that. And I'm supposed to deliver that. So one of the things we're working with our administration now is that we change that kind of dynamic. And that we have our school board, and it's their job and it's not easy for them, to come up with a very clearly defined mission, vision. What do we expect? Tell me that, and then I need to enlist the aid of some of the most talented people I've ever met in meeting that until we have a cohesive vision that we all are working towards, and that gets us into one school district. That's one of my challenges. And that's hard. That is really hard, especially with all the demands they face. So let's take a look, and I'm not going to read to you. On the left side there is our district mission statement. I think everybody here probably has a similar one. It talks about the key elements of what we all want. And then I was tasked last year when the board got very frustrated with the state budget, and they say, how do you keep a vision in the face of all this challenge? And I came up with something we called our vision in the face of adversity. And that was the vision that I developed. So one of the things I said might be interesting, let's align the two and see how they work. So what we did is we took our district mission and we took the key words. And we do this with all of our brand new employees, as a matter of fact. We go through this and we start talking about in this wonderful, lofty, way too long mission statement, what are the key words? Well, clearly, enhancing student achievement. We want to be a humanistic organization. We want to help our kids emotionally and academically. Highest quality education, maximum potential, respectable citizens. I don't think anybody would dispute those are wonderful, noble goals. And I said, well, then how do we craft that mission into a vision? So I took those key elements, and this is what I did with our admin, our leadership team, and our board. And I said, let's take out of our vision, out of the vision that I came with, what we want to do. So as I said earlier, we have got to start focusing on multiple opportunities and options. We have to be looking at both academic and non-academic areas and make sure that they are relevant and engaging. This is something that we have to start getting a mindset of. Just because we've done it doesn't mean it's right. And just because we've done it forever doesn't mean the kids are tied into it anymore. And if we continue to say that we're not going to embrace technology, interweave technology, if we continue to say that it's everything's foreign, I'm going to do what I've done, we're going to die. We're going to die as an institution. We need to really be fostering and expanding communication between students, teachers, and parents. We have to look at civic literacy, global and environmental issues, and the fact that we are now, especially now, I mean, could there ever be a greater example of why we are now an interdependent economy? We want to have collaborative learners. One of the first things I have to tell you, my youngest son who graduated Cal, go Bears, and just last May, you notice I don't say where I graduated from. That would be, I think, 90 points unanswered from UCLA, but why are we counting? Anyway, go Bears. My youngest son who graduated Cal last spring is now working. He graduated the business school, and he's working in an investment firm. And yes, we're nervous every day when the phone rings. Is it him saying he's got bad news? But he talks about in the world he has found himself in, it is all collaboration. He is required to work with a team. And it is not a matter of any one person shining or not. This is what his requirement is. This is one of the reasons he got hired over the other blah, blah applicants, because he demonstrated that ability. So we have to understand that it has to be about this idea of being collaborative and that they want to be successful and they want to make positive contributions to their communities. So those are the areas that, as superintendent from our board, we're trying to carry as a vision for our school district. And this is an interesting data set, and I have to tell you, several people said, don't show it. But I think I have to, because I think it needs to be something we all understand. So is it about the money? We keep saying, if we only had more money, we'll consider the following. Laguna Beach and Beverly Hills, Bob Fraze, who is long time here, is phenomenal superintendent, is right now superintendent of Laguna Beach. John Fitzpatrick is our former superintendent. He was in Beverly Hills. Get to work with both of them closely. So I started listening to their challenges. They have challenges, by the way. They have challenges. So Beverly Hills API right now is 803, and the comps from their last reporting period were 10.6. Laguna Beach High, 8.11, comps at 9.1. And let's take a look at Agoura High. I'm bragging about my district. Tony's is better. I'll tell you right now, if he comes out, he's smoking me, but we'll get there in a second. Agoura High, 839, 10.6. Calabasas High, 842, 10.8. Nothing to be ashamed of here. Look at that. But take a look at the resources. Laguna per pupil expenditures are $13,416. Beverly High's per pupil expenditures, $10,719. Las Virgenes, 8,340. Sorry, guys, it's not about the money. I mean, money says I'm cheap, I heard that. No, it's not about that. The money doesn't make the difference. I'll tell you right now what makes the difference. It's our people and our kids and our community and a common focus and vision and a commitment to what we do. I'm not saying they don't have that either, but we're focused. This district looks for this, and they know it. And it's hard to say, well, if we only had more money, we know we'd be better. Those districts are struggling. Not because they're not doing well, but they've got to answer the flip side of the question I'm just showing you. Why is Las Virgenes and Oak Park and Caneo, why are they doing so well with far less resources? So here's where we are today. In our school district, students continue to achieve at great levels. Our community values us both in words and dollars. We've passed two bond measures, and we've renewed a partial tax for 8 years. Our technology resources are becoming the envy of the region. We just implemented and rolled out a consistent web page format, which is hosted out of state with service 24/7. Basically, every single teacher has access. We were training our entire staff. They're loving it. It's caught on faster than I ever could have imagined. 3-year commitment to this, regardless of funding. We've already paid for 3 years of this. And all of a sudden, all of our teachers are getting web pages going and communicating with their kids and parents. It's going great. We have a synergy. We look for new ways to help our kids. We created a community learning center. We had a potential for a charter school coming in. We looked at what did they offer that we didn't, and maybe we should be offering that. And we began doing that. We're about to begin international baccalaureate at Agoura High School. And hopefully, at our next school board meeting, our board will approve 2 brand new performing arts education centers for construction with our bond money. We took a page from Good to Great. and every one of our principals embraces as site leaders the idea of pockets of greatness. And it's a simple concept of we're in a legislative process. We can't dictate, but we have to get everyone to buy into a common vision and mission. And within that, how do we create pockets of greatness in the areas that we can excel? So in terms of our goals, one of the things we learned last year in our district that worked really well is we tried to have a focus. At that point, I had four initiatives, and man, I was like a dog with a bone. The board said, we want to do environmental stuff. Not this year. We're going to focus on four things. We're going to keep to it. We want to retain that. It worked. People understood what we wanted to do. The area we didn't do great, is we're going to do better now, is once the board is saying this is the vision we want to share for this district, we're going to be communicating that a lot more clearly to our school sites so they feel less like islands and more like part of a bigger organization. To do that, I need to increase site autonomy. I want our principals to be true instructional leaders at their sites and figure out the best ways to deliver on the mission. And then we want to identify site and district initiatives that support that mission and vision. So we're not going to become independent contractors. We're going to share this common vision. And I want to foster a culture of questions. And that's really unique because a lot of people, when I was, understand, I was a quarter years as the chief financial officer. When you're the chief financial officer, the only question you ask is there enough money? All right, it's not a culture of questions. But I want to have a culture of questions. So these are some of the questions. You know, as a principal, how much flexibility can I get to use my resources? If I want to run a class size is larger, but do some kind of an opportunity class that's never been done, can I just do that on my own? Are libraries becoming anachronistic? Do we need to have media research centers? How many people saw the article about United Airlines 2 weeks ago? Their stock plummets because some reporter picked a four-year-old news release and thought it was new off of Google. And their stock plummets. That says a lot about what we need to be teaching kids. How do we make sure our kids are engaging in practices that foster a positive impact on the environment? And at what point do we require and desire our kids to say, this community supports you through their taxes. How will you support the community in return? So saying that, make sure you understand that the face of education that never changes.
Once again, technology did it. We made it. Unfortunately, Dr. Catherine Scroggin from the Simi Valley Unified School District is hosting her own forum this evening for school board candidates. So she asked me to read a prepared statement. Like all other districts up and down the state, the Simi Valley Unified School District recognizes that the face of education continues to change as we move into the 21st century. We, like all of you, struggle with budgetary issues, federal and state accountability requirements, declining enrollment, and increased demands for school services and programs. We, like all of you, also pride ourselves on the fact that even with diminished resources, our dedicated team of professional educators continues to provide quality educational opportunities for all students at schools where children can feel a sense of pride and learn and grow every day. It was during a recent discussion of how the face of education may change even more drastically in our district due to budget constraints that we realized we'd overlooked something really, really important. While we were preparing for the worst, we were concentrating on the worry lines and the grim set to our jaws on our face of education. In doing so, we'd overlooked the broad smiles that came ever so frequently as we found reasons to celebrate so many successes with our students, our parents, and our staffs. We smiled as we remembered that our district-wide API score continues to move beyond the 800 mark, and that 15 elementary, 3 middle, and 2 of our high schools have improved their API scores. Yay! Those smiles came again as we remembered receiving the prestigious NEA Saturn Award this summer for our outstanding BITSA program, as we applauded the launching of a new Law and Society Academy at Santa Susana High School, and as we considered the heartfelt thanks expressed by parents involved in our parent project at Sinaloa Middle School. Those smiles brightened as we learned that Apollo High School had won the Governor's Fitness Challenge and would receive a $100,000 fitness center. And again, as we announced that through our partnership with Countrywide, every student computer in the district had been updated over a 2-year period. Finally, We had forgotten the look of peace and satisfaction that comes over our face when we thought of our talented, committed teachers, classified employees, and administrators. These are the people who have dedicated their lives to educating and supporting our children. These are the people who create great moments for our students and their families. These are the people who truly make a difference. The face of education is changing in Simi Valley, in Ventura County, and all across the state. But it's because of everyone in this room, everyone who works in each one of our districts, at this university and at every other educational institution, that the reflection we see in the mirror every day is the one that tells us the story of great heroes in education. This is the face of education that will never change. Thank you. Dr. Mario Contini can't be here this evening either. He's making a presentation at the Ventura County Department of Education. His 2007 annual report for Kaneo Valley Unified School District is Building Bright Futures, one student at a time. Mario and Ellen Smith, the superintendent of Moore Park, were part of a group of superintendents who visited England last year. Ellen is making a presentation this evening that the two of them created to chronicle their findings. The Moore Park Unified School District celebrated its centennial in 1995, and since then, the district has exploded with academic achievement in every school, successfully passed an all-encompassing bond issue, and continues to serve an extraordinary population of diverse learners. Please welcome Ellen this evening.
Good evening. Okay. Well, as you know, the theme for this evening is the changing face of education. And customarily, the superintendents are talking about their own districts. But as you've heard from Marion, I'm going to be talking a little bit about some of the changes that are going on in the British school system and then conclude with recommendations that we should consider here in California. As you've heard, last fall there was a wonderful staff development opportunity, and five Ventura County school district superintendents went along with the support of CLU, USC, and the Ventura County office to learn from our colleagues in England. The main purpose of the visit was really to explore England's national priority on developing educational leadership and effective change. And you can see our group there, left to right, Terry Cannings of CLU, just retired, Roger Rice from Oxnard High School District, David Gomez from Santa Paula, Professor David Marsh from USC, and in front of him is Trudy Arriaga, Ventura Unified, Nancy Carroll, Ocean View, and yours truly on the far right. And Mario was taking the picture. So he, as you know, he couldn't be here with us tonight, but that was our wonderful bed and breakfast place, the Ashley Hotel. Some of the topics I'll be going over briefly tonight: Every Child Matters, which you could say is somewhat like the British version of NCLB, personalization of learning, or how they're trying to make learning relevant, Building Schools for the Future, a huge funding initiative, Leading from the Middle, the power of involving leaders at every level, Leadership Development and Succession, because of their critical need to replace retiring school leaders, and finally, INET, which is an international collaboration initiative. Every Child Matters. I love the connotation of this title. As I said, it's kind of the English counterpart of NCLB with a much more comprehensive approach. And these are the aims: be healthy, stay safe, enjoy and achieve, make a positive contribution, achieve economic well-being, realistic and not just test scores. The program is coordinated nationally and it's comprehensive. For example, when new immigrant families, of which they have many, come into London, there is a welcome center to acquaint them with all the welfare services, the schools, the English classes, and the health care that's available for them. Not surprisingly, they're getting results. We all know intuitively that children learn better when they're fed, when they're healthy, and when they're safe. Education then can truly be the route out of poverty as the achievement gap diminishes. There have been a number of important changes with the British education system. There's been more of a focus on workplace readiness and specialized secondary schools, just as we're doing. One element that particularly captured my attention is this concept called personalized learning. The philosophy of personalized learning resulted in the total restructuring of the coordination of education and human services at the national level. The Department of Education was restructured along with several other departments to become the Department for Children, Schools, and Families. And it now encompasses not only schools, but health services, welfare, delivery of juvenile justice programs, etc. And there's now only one comprehensive system for these services instead of the many different jurisdictions that we all face trying to work with every day. And to reiterate, the whole purpose is for those Every Child Matters outcomes. Be healthy, be safe, enjoy and achieve, which I love, and make a positive contribution and achieve economic well-being. In the school setting, Every Child Matters and personalized learning has resulted in more student focus, smaller groupings within schools, more relationship development with teachers to create more belonging and a sense of community, and diversity is embraced as an asset. This picture is of a Good Morning Project. We visited an elementary school that had 37 languages spoken there, mostly African, Middle Eastern, and Eastern European nations. And every day, a child from one of those language groups would come to the office and teach everyone in the whole school the good morning from that language. Another aspect of personalization is student voice. And I found this also very compelling. Think about these questions in our situation, in our education system. We all know that buy-in from educators is critical in the success of any change, right? Yet how much time do we spend seeking student buy-in about the relevance of their education? We ask for feedback from parents about our schools, but how often do we ask the students directly about their experience at school? We know that the more time students spend talking about their learning, the greater the probability that they will internalize it and integrate it. But what is the current ratio in most classrooms of teacher talk to student talk? Well, here's what the British are doing to help develop student voice and leadership. Schools are working to create a culture, they use the term ethos, which is kind of interesting, where student views are welcome and where input goes beyond the superficial to the quality of teaching and the relevancy of programs. We know that that's a touchy area, right? We ask students about the quality of teaching. The goal is a partnership in which students and teachers accept joint responsibility for the character and quality of what happens in school. The development of student leadership and responsibility within school setting is seen to be a really important part of that ethos or culture. They have a head boy and a head girl. You know, if you've read your British novels, you're familiar with that, and vertical tutoring. But those responsibilities are real. It's more along the lines of a head resident in a college dorm, I think, than what we typically talk about in terms of student tutoring. So there's a lot of responsibility that's given. Here are some of the alternatives British educators are exploring with regard to personalized curriculum, learning, and workforce preparation. There's an attempt to pare down the core curriculum and reduce the requirements for the non-core subject to allow more choices of learning at each level. As Dawn mentioned earlier about the importance of technology as a utility, information and communications technology is part of the core curriculum. It is not left to the individual teacher to decide how to incorporate that technology. Another area is metacognition, the knowledge about your own thoughts and factors that influence your thinking and your success. That's a part of their core curriculum. Examples is this whole idea of students and teachers co-constructing what the students are going to learn, integrating prior knowledge with new knowledge. That's familiar to us. A lot more in the area of self-evaluation of their own successes and failures. And I like this one. We're all working a lot with collecting data and analyzing it. The data is seen as just as important to the students as it is to the teachers. The photo that you see here is of a small 400-mile-per-gallon race car that was built by some high school students as an example of project-based learning to solve real-life problems. Building Schools for the Future in England is the name of a huge financial investment in the nation's education infrastructure. For over 5 years, they've got the money set aside to rebuild or renew every secondary school and half the primary schools within the next 15 years, with the involvement of their local communities. And the focus is on preparing students for the 21st century workplace. Leadership in British schools is changing, and I'd like to add a little context. We were trying to, you know, say, well, a superintendent is like, well, there isn't anything like a superintendent in Britain because there are no school districts. It's a national system, and every school is more or less autonomous. They report to a council, and they're governed by the British school system, and they're funded, but there is no such thing as a school system, although that is one of the innovations that they're working with, is trying to connect schools a little bit. So we have something unique here. But under that system, the head teacher, which is corresponds to the principal, has been the sole person, you know, with a lot of authority. And that's slowly changing. Leading from the middle is a new initiative for them, perhaps very similar to our shared decision-making model that's been in effect for quite some time. Training of teacher leaders is encouraged, and new roles are emerging, and there's much more emphasis on collaboration. One of the key roles of leading from the middle is a focus on student data and student learning, just like it is here. Leadership development in England is really essential. There is a demographic time bomb, as it says up there. Some of the charts we saw were so frightening that, you know, the number of people that are about to retire and the number of people that were actually in the pipeline, you know, or is almost inverse. And so the national school system has stepped in and said, we have got to get something going here very quickly or we're going to have no leadership. And so there was a huge effort to systematically coordinate and recruit and train the next generation of head teachers. Under the Tony Blair administration, funds were set aside for a National College of School Leadership, and what you're looking at is the billboard or the set of goals that are on a beautiful, in the doorway of a beautiful conference center that you'll see in a minute. But the whole idea of this National College is to research the best training methods and provide this training virtually free of charge to the participants so that the head teachers are going to be ready. And this is this beautiful building that is dedicated entirely to developing school leaders. It's got a 5-star restaurant and hotel, and it's a few hours train ride outside of London, adjacent to a university campus. And it, as I said, its sole focus is to train school leaders. Makes you feel pretty good when you go there. You're valued. Some of the issues that the National College of School Leadership has identified that are kind of stumbling blocks. Guess what? The perceived workload of head teachers often acts as a deterrent to people wanting the job. You're not surprised. Well, what they found is that if someone gets a chance to actually try a small piece of the work, the negative perception changes. And that's another reason that leading from the middle is so important. So once you get your toe in the water, be careful. Another problem that was kind of interesting and unique, especially the term, sitting tenant, that's a reference to an assistant head teacher who doesn't move up into a head position And that's a problem because that training spot is being taken and it's blocked. So that's something else that they're trying to work on, is more lateral types of positions, such as working in the National College, that these people can do. Because of the dire shortage of head teachers, they have a fast-track training program. And what we all thought was very unique and interesting about it is that rather than have the program and then the people go through it, it was take the candidates and really give them a personalized assessment. How are your communication skills? How do you know how to build a team? Do you know how to communicate well? Those are the kinds of things that are the same components that we have, but it's a different starting place. It's starting with the very specific needs of that candidate, and then there is a lot of coaching to get the candidate ready. And the final aspect of this PowerPoint I wanted to tell you about is INET, which is a trust-funded international networking system that focuses on collaboration across the globe among schools that are really motivated to transform themselves. INET has an annual conference every year where there's research is shared and ongoing worldwide networking via the internet, naturally. And the key to all of this system, what they call system redesign, we might call reform or some other term, is taking theory and applying it. And that's what the schools talk about when they get together and when they communicate online. Here's a research framework that I'm not going to go into depth with, but just very quickly. The following grid shows 20 types of identified school configurations or reforms that are effective. And across the top is a rating system that they call the four deeps. Deep types of impact. Deep student learning is one. Deep student experience at school. Deep support for students and teachers. And finally, deep support by and for school leadership. And so what they've done is rated which of these reforms are or reconfigurations are going to be the most powerful for those to affect those kinds of changes. And you can see some medium, some high. But just the ones I'll point out are the ones where there is actually a high category all the way across. And this one, innovation. School-based and school-wide. On the next page, you'll see the areas are distributed leadership, student leadership that I talked about, and succession leadership, because as we know, that transition is a time that, you know, there could really be a dip in the progress. So the recommendations. Just as we strive for consistent and effective teaching of state standards, we need to ensure that support systems are also systematically provided. And I think one really good example of that movement is RTI, Response to Intervention, that we're all trying to figure out and work toward. Another one is on the emotional social side, and I think many of us have participated in the asset-rich environments movement for children and youth, where we start to connect children with caring adults and encourage them. And I certainly wish we had a really well-coordinated system of education and human services like the British have, but we have to keep working with what we have. Another recommendation is to create venues for student voice. Get their views and their feedback about really substantive aspects of their educational experience. I know we do a senior survey, but I think that's far too late. We need to do it much earlier and more systematically. Another recommendation is develop opportunities for students to make choices about their educational program. It's tough. There are a lot of requirements, but there are things that we can do. And I hear teachers every day talk about the power of, well, I gave them this choice and that choice, and they did it. You know, almost shocking. And we forget that. Embracing information communication technology skills as an essential part of our core curriculum. I think that's absolutely essential, and I think Don said that as well. And finally, working on ways that we can systematically involve students in self-assessment, goal setting, progress monitoring, and sharing that data that we're collecting with them for useful purposes. With regard to leadership, we need to develop and recruit leadership talent rather than waiting for it to step forward. We need to create more opportunities for teachers and middle-level administrators to try leadership roles in smaller doses. And we need to ensure that underrepresented minorities are purposefully included in leadership development. And finally, people like myself and all the local districts here need to take responsibility to systematically prepare for the imminent retirement of the baby boomers through concerted, coordinated efforts to develop the next generation of educational leaders. And my final recommendation to you all is to go on an international exchange trip if you ever have the opportunity. So thank you very much.
Dr. Tony Knight is the superintendent of the Oak Park Unified School District. He should be introduced as Mr. Flexible. He went from being the first speaker this evening to the second speaker this evening. He proceeded to the third speaker this evening and finally said, "I'll be happy to go last." So that's an example of the flexibility, and I appreciate that very much. Dr. Tony Knight.
Thank you very much. I'd like to thank Cal Lutheran and everybody for putting this forum on every year. It's a wonderful opportunity for the superintendents to get a chance to talk to people beyond our school districts who get tired of hearing us all the time. And we get to talk to people from other districts and in the academic community, so it's really wonderful. You know, when I think about the changing face of education, I think about the faces of the children and the students that we as a nation are charged to educate each day. And sadly, we know about these faces. What we know about these faces is that they are becoming poorer each year economically, and that the achievement gap between these children and the children that make up my district and most of your districts is becoming wider. And I think that's something that's very important that we have to acknowledge. According to David Berliner, policymakers typically conclude that this gap must be the result of wrongly designed school policies, either expectations that are too low, teachers who are insufficiently qualified, curricula that are badly designed, or not enough testing and accountability. And Berliner posits that the achievement gap is the result, however, of America's poverty problem, and that until we realize the enormity of that problem and work to ameliorate it, simply focusing on schools and classrooms will not address the issue. And I think that's a very big statement, because we in our profession spend a lot of time filling the air with a lot of discussion and conversation about what happens in our classrooms rather than the social issue, which is larger. And there is a huge amount of research that indicates that we're spinning our wheels in the wrong direction. And we also know that poverty is strongly correlated with race and ethnicity in this country, that new immigrants, African Americans and Hispanics, are heavily overrepresented in the groups that suffer the most severe poverty in America. The United States has the highest rate of childhood poverty among the world's most developed nations. That's all of Europe and many other countries around the world. Now, the U.S. likes to be number one in everything, and when it comes to the percent of poor children, we continue to hold our remarkable status. If we examine the latest results of the PISA study, which is the Program for International Student Assessment, it's similar to the TIMSS report that you probably are familiar with, except this report includes reading, literacy, mathematics, not just science. And if we disaggregate the data, we see that the United States, the American white students, would be in the world seventh in mathematics, second in reading, and fourth in science out of 30 developed nations in the study. But that Hispanic and African American students would rank 28th and 29th respectively out of the 30 nations. In the TIMSS report, for example, we know that children from poverty tend to score, their schools score similar to schools in places like Somalia, and that children from wealthy schools who come from wealthier families tend to score evenly with nations like Singapore. Berliner and other researchers point out that arguing about rewriting the No Child Left Behind Act is missing the point. Instead, the government policy, could reduce the achievement gap by doing some of the following things. Number one, ensure that quality preventative health care is available to all families. Number two, raise the minimum wage so that people who work for the minimum wage are less poor and better off. And a better idea is that to ensure that people have access to better paying jobs. And provide universal preschool and child care programs, because these programs have been shown by study after study to pay huge dividends and save taxpayer dollars in the long run. There's just no reason not to do them. In fact, that's one of the things I appreciated in Ellen's report in England. England has had universal preschool since 1995. Every single person, every child in England has the option of going to preschool. It's not mandatory, it's voluntary, from age 2 or 3, I believe it is, and straight through. Because they have found that when children go to preschool and they enter school ready to learn, it saves millions and millions of dollars in trying to remediate children who come to school without those proper preparations. But in this country, we haven't learned that yet. So when reformers push for more rigorous standards in our schools, we, as educators, should push for a raise for better livable wages. And when there is a push for more professional development for teachers, we need to also demand universal medical coverage. And when they demand more accountability in the schools, we should be demanding universal preschool. Now, this year's presidential election has been referred to as historic. And I took the time to download the education policy and the poverty policy of both Barack Obama and John McCain, and I made copies for you. And I put them over there where the wine is, and because you probably need to have a drink of it when you read them on both candidates. You know, I think that, you know, as educators, we tend to want to be apolitical or not be involved or stay neutral. And, you know, the time for that is really over. You need to really be aware, we as educators really need to be aware of what the candidates are saying about education and what they're saying about poverty in this country. Because, as we have seen, the policies that they put out on the campaign trail are really not a secret. Some people say, well, we'll see what happens when he or she gets in. I downloaded their policies of both of those candidates off of their websites and made copies for you, and you should read them. You should really take the time, and you should share those with your spouse or other people and people that you know when you start talking about politics. We're the educators. We're supposed to be the experts on this topic, and we should not allow these things to be done to us by people who are not professional in this particular field. When you look at these, you may be surprised to know that only Barack Obama has a policy about poverty. But McCain addresses some of the issues in his economic policies as well. And as educators, we need to understand the differences between these different kinds of policies as they relate to No Child Left Behind and other ideas. With all the change that everybody is talking about this year, my hope is that we will look at the changing face of education by also looking at the face of poverty rather than turning our heads away from it or treating it as a separate issue and thereby change the face of the debate about the achievement gap in the United States. And we have to be the ones. It's very hard for teachers and principals and superintendents of urban school districts who are educating large numbers of urban poor to make the statements that I have made tonight. Because what people say is, oh, sure, they want to blame it on something else. They don't want to take accountability for itself. But those of us who are running school districts and working in school districts that are basically educating upper middle class white children and achieving well need to acknowledge the fact that a lot of that achievement comes from the fact that they come from educated homes and have every advantage before they enter our very fine schools, and that we value add to that. And that we have value added to that by providing the most wonderful environment with fantastic teachers and others. But ignoring the problem in the inner city schools and the issue of poverty does not serve our profession very well. Thank you very much.